Tjena tjena mitt bena, it's Jorgen here with Social Media Know-How. What's the difference between employer branding and employer brand management? What social media channels are best to attract talent? How did one woman from Cumbria single-handedly win the war for Britain? Allegedly. All this and more in my chat today with Richard Mosley. But first, let's see what Ruby's up to.
Thanks, Jorgen. Ruby here. SM London Live is just around the corner, and if you haven't secured your spot, what are you waiting for? On the 11th of November, we'll be hearing from all our favourite brands on social, and Steve Racine is the latest speaker to be announced. We're excited to hear what the buzz is about from Buzz Sumo. I've also heard he's pretty good at ping pong too, so you all better get practicing if you want to beat him in bounce. For an exclusive 10% off your ticket price, use the code PODCAST when buying your ticket. See you there!
Okay, let's activate our brands.
Right, so I'm here with Richard Mosley, who is the Global Vice President of Strategy and Advisory at Universum. How are you doing today, Richard?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to speak to you.
Pleasure. And of course, you are the author of The Employer Brand and the more recent title, Employer Brand Management, a book which I've just finished reading. It's an excellent read. And you are a consultant and a cultural beachcomber, whatever that means.
It means I sometimes get some time off from my travels to go and see a bit of culture, I think, or lie on the beach. So it's a good combination of the two terms. There we are. That's what it means.
Wonderful. And you're involved in the Employer Branding Academy. You're heading up the advisory board. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. So the Employer Branding Academy is a relatively recent venture. We thought that it would be good to put something out as an e-learning platform, combination of e-learning and workshop based, just for people who are getting into an employer branding role, really, because you know, reading a book is one thing, but it's useful also to meet with other people who are having a similar experience, similar challenges, and have some time to work through the various tools and disciplines that are required to get it done right. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And we're actually doing a bit of work with Universum to help promote this academy. So if you use the promo code UNDERCOVER, then there's a special discount there. And I hope that's still current when you try that.
I'm sure it will be. I'll support you all the way.
Great. And then finally, at the bottom of your LinkedIn profile, it says you're an actor, teacher, and anthropologist.
I started that way, yes. So my first venture into the world of work was actually as an anthropologist in Africa. And to get to that venture, I had to actually do a bit of time working as an actor and as a teacher in Africa just to become acclimatized and have the money to get to the tribe I wanted to study. So there we are. It was a three-in-one role that lasted for about a year and a half, actually, but a good place to start, I think, for employer branding.
Absolutely, and I think there are some references to that in your book, which I recall.
There are, yes.
Right,
indeed.
So let's start with, could you tell us about your role at Universum?
Yes, yeah, so I'm Global Head of Strategy, and of course, when anybody says that they're Head of Strategy, it sounds like you're just kind of sitting around in rooms and pointing at things or numbering things off in threes. But there's a fair bit of truth in that. But it's a dual role, really, one of which is with a number of Universum's global clients. There is a demand, I guess, for a bit more of a strategic relationship, not just once a year, here's the research, but actually a much more of an ongoing role, helping them through their employer brand strategy. And we've got quite a number of international, multinational clients who are now looking for that. And that's really, one of the areas I'm helping on. So it's strategy for clients, but it's also strategy for Universum. We've got a huge number of things going on at the moment. A real, it's an organization in transformation. transformation itself, with, you know, many new product services coming through, and that's my second role, strategy for Universum itself. So it's a good mix. I still have plenty of time with clients, but also I spend a bit of time with the actual strategy of the company I'm working for, which is good.
Absolutely. And what's your definition of employer brand management? Because it involves a bit more than just the regular employer branding.
Yes, I mean, these terms, you know, often are used a bit interchangeably, but I think if I start with the employer branding piece first, actually, I think conventionally, if you're using employer branding in the way that branding is used within consumer marketing, it's largely about the way you create the image through creative expression, communication, and so on. And of course, this is a very important thing to be doing, and it's an important part of employer brand management. And one way of looking at brand management is simply, as in the corporate brand sense, making sure that you're policing that identity and that branding to make sure it's consistent and you're getting your message across in a consistent way. But I think in the more, should we say, and I would say, of course, advanced companies, those that are beginning to push beyond that, it's also about managing the brand experience itself. So I guess you could describe employer brand management at its best as coordinating all of the parts that make up a positive brand experience. So that's communication, but it's also those elements of people management where you're designing processes and you're designing experiences that are going to reinforce that brand.
Great. And you wrote an article in the Harvard Business Review not too long ago. It's always around why CEOs need to pay more attention to employer branding or employer brand management, if you will.
Yes.
What was the scoop?
Well, it came from the research that we did. We did some research called the Outlook Survey, which was about employer brand in 2020, and it was partly about what people are doing now, but also partly what they expect to be doing in 5 years' time. But one of the interesting findings was that we talked to quite a few CEOs in that survey, and 60% of them said, when they were asked, who's really responsible at the end of the day, who's ultimately accountable for this, for the employer brand, and they said what they were. So I thought that was interesting, and I think there are two reasons for it. I mean, first, there's reasons why that 60%, I guess, are saying, well, they're in charge of it. But also another reason why they should be. And I think the first reason is that we know from PwC's latest CEO survey that the vast majority, I think it's like 73% in the last count this year, are really concerned about attracting the right talent or the right caliber of talent. And of course, if they are, they really need to be paying more attention to their employer brand reputation, because, of course, as we know, you're not really going to attract the right caliber of talent unless you have a good reputation. And I think the second part, and it goes back to what we're saying about employer brand management at its best, is that if you want to build a strong employer brand, it highly depends, and I think more than ever with the kind of transparency you have now with social media, it depends on the culture and the values of the organization. So if there's anybody who should be paying attention to the culture and values and certainly taking a lead on it, it should be the CEO. So I think for these two reasons, and those were the two main arguments that I made, I think CEOs are and should be paying more attention to the employer brand moving forwards. And I think we see it's going in that direction.
Great. Well, can you give us an example of a CEO who is highly involved with employer branding?
Well, I always, one of my favorite companies is Lego, and I remember it was one of the organizations where it was very interesting that when we did the employer brand development, the employer brand development was done with the board, and it was the CEO who really did take paid a lot of attention. And I guess partly that's because he was one of the, I guess, younger breed of CEOs. I think then he was in his early 40s, just coming to Lego to turn it round. And he recognized
McKinsey guy, isn't he?
He's an ex-McKinsey guy, yeah. and really, really understood the role of culture in terms of turning the organization around, and they really have. So I mean, you know, if there's one organization that really shines forth where from the outset the CEO's taken a lead on it and seen it through, it would be Lego. But I mean, there are others, but that one really shines out for me.
Excellent. And what's a step-by-step approach to employer brand management?
Well, I mean, I think if you're building it from the bottom up, you've really got to start with the strategy of the organization. And I'm assuming in this case that you really are taking a more integrated approach. But you've got to understand the kind of talent you need. And when you think about the talent, you're also thinking about skills and capabilities and so on. So I think unless you're really building your employer brand on who you're looking for and in what numbers and where, et cetera, then you're going to have a bit of a problem. So that's the first place to start. And I think then you take the external view. I still think you need to understand how you're currently seen. I mean, your employer brand is how you're seen, essentially. What kind of associations people have with you, awareness, consideration, etc., and how that stacks up against your competitors. Next step would be to have a really honest look at yourselves. Where are your strengths? Partly because of organizational needs and performance needs, and also partly because of the need to strengthen some areas to attract the right talent, you also need to think about where your stretch is, where your aspirations are, but realistic aspirations in terms of improvements. And I think when you've done those three things, then you come to the next step, which is building your employer brand platform, and that's partly your EVP, your priority areas, the things, three or four things you're really going to focus your attention on, plus your identity, your look, feel. Maybe a campaign, not necessarily a campaign. It's not necessarily always essential these days when, content marketing can be a lot more diverse. But once you've got your employer brand platform, you're then well set to plan and execute your communication, ideally internally as well as externally, because you want to be building engagement and building advocacy so you can fully use the social media and increasingly employee generated content and so on. Also, next step, I think, also and ongoing is to build the experience. I mean, it's a bit like any kind of marketing. One side of it is of course building equity externally with your communication, but you've got to keep improving the product. I mean, it's no different for an employer brand than a consumer brand. So you internally, you've got to be mindful of how you continue to improve the employment experience, how you improve your learning and development, your various processes, orientation, maybe performance management, however you're doing it, you need to keep moving that forwards. And then finally, of course, measuring it. So, we all know that HR analytics are particularly sexy at the moment, and I think continuously will be. So the final part of the cycle is really just checking out where you're making progress and where perhaps you're slacking behind and need to improve or adjust. And I think really that is the full cycle. Good research platform at the front, insights give you that strategic platform, which is the EVP and your identity. And then the communication planning, the action planning, and the measurement. That would be my 7-point plan.
Yeah, great. And then rinse and repeat every 5 years, 10 years.
Well, no. I mean, I think.
Non-stop.
Well, I think the old way of thinking was largely driven by I think like a campaign mentality. So I think it used to be the case, and I've been doing this now for 10, 12 years, that You develop your EVP, and then you'd create essentially with a campaign in mind. You would end up, you've got your EVP, you'd create almost a campaign toolkit, and you'd run that campaign and probably be tagline driven, and you'd have a certain look and feel and imagery, certain headlines, certain images, and essentially you put that together in a toolkit, and then you'd for the sake of consistency, you'd run it everywhere, and it'd be through all of your paid media, but you would also use it on your career site and so on. Now, of course, social's blown that out of the water, that approach, because people are paying far less attention to paid media. We know that. In fact, there's this new the new apps that Apple are bringing out, which you know pretty much from in the digital arena, take the ads out. You can't see them anymore. So you've got to rely on content. And of course, if you're talking about content, you've got to have a flow of content, and you've got to be it's got to be constantly refreshed and pretty you know pretty variable. You know you can't just keep banging on with the same manufactured advertising messages. So I think you don't really go through that cycle anymore of you know, oh, we've done our employer brand and we'll redo it again in 3 or 4 or 5 years' time. It is constant. It's constant refreshment now. And I think, you know, even the underlying EVP, you probably want to, you know, move little elements here and there around the core EVP on a fairly regular basis, at least every year. And in terms of localization, well, I think that's, you know, almost in again, constant movement in terms of learning what content, what messaging is working. And as long as you're building the same core associations as you go, that's fine. You want to be refreshing all of the time.
Right. And who owns the employer brand? Is it HR or is it marketing?
Well, of course, ultimately, and everybody would say this, marketers always say this as well, that we all own the brand. You know, everybody should own the brand, or at least feel ownership for it. So that's obviously, you know, one way of thinking about it. But of course, there's also responsibility and accountability for getting things done. I would say if you're in an organization where just because of the nature of your goals and you're just keeping things simple, if employer branding to you is essentially still just communication, then I think marketing should own it. Because it's a marketing activity. If it's just communication, then the experts are the marketeers, and you should really let them take a degree of control over it. If, however, and of course we're recommending that it's more than just communication, if it extends into experience as well, and of course, as I say, we say it should be, then I think every time it should be HR, because, you know, HR are the people who really are the ones who at least should understand the people management side of the business better than anyone else. They're the experts, they're the consultants, right? They're not line management, you know, from a leadership point of view, but they should understand the ins and outs and be the experts in terms of people management. And then from the point of extending that into communication, they should then actually have the ownership of the employer brand, because in that respect, the employer brand is the employer brand experience. And that's not marketing. You know, marketing are always going to be externally focused. They may do a bit of internal marketing from time to time, but they're always going to be more externally focused. So that's why it comes back to HR. And I think my experience, all of the best examples of really strong, effective employer brand management, it has pretty much always sat in the HR function. And where it has sat in the marketing function, it's always been much more externally focused than internally focused.
Okay, right. And once you've got it and you're doing it, how mm-hmm. do you measure your employer brand?
Well, I think a combination of external image, you've got to understand how your employer brand is perceived. I mean, that's an obvious starting point. And again, on one side, there's going to be the actual equity of the name. So what do people associate with you? What you've got to understand what your ratings are in terms of things that you want to be associated with. So if you want to be innovative, or you want to be seen as progressive, or you want to be seen as a good development company, then you've got to measure those things. And that, of course, that's universal bread and butter. You know, we help measure employer brands from that perspective. And also, then once you've got that right, you need to have the flip side of that, because you're making a call on what you want to be associated with based on its effect on consideration and preference, etc. So that's the other side of measuring your employer brand. Is it driving the kind of behaviors you want? Is it driving people to consider you as an employer and to prefer you versus the companies you're competing with? So that's one side. And that ultimately, you know, in terms of your external employer brand, then that's very essential. But what's often missing, of course, is the inside. So if your employer brand, let's say, again, is built around those three or four key things, it's in your EVP, you should also be measuring them internally to make sure that you're delivering against those particular promises or attributes. And likewise, just as your external image may be driving consideration and preference, internally, you're measuring whether the strength of association with those particular qualities internally, this is a place where, you know, we can innovate, or this is a place where we get great development, how those associations then are translated into engagement and advocacy. And I think ultimately, if there's one thing now that you would really say, look, if there's just one measure you would go for to say, okay, strength of the employer brand, now in the social world we live in, I would say it's employee advocacy or the employer net promoter score. It's phrased in different ways, but essentially, you know, how what proportion of your employees are advocating the brand. And if you're doing no external recruitment marketing or employer brand building, if you've got strong word of mouth and advocacy now, I think you will end up with a strong employer brand.
Gotcha. And the guys at LinkedIn, they recently did a study looking at the costs of a bad employer brand, and I don't remember the number exactly now, but yes, there's a huge impact. Is there a financial cost or benefit to employer branding, and how can you measure it?
Well, I think the simplest way of putting it, and it goes to the downside as well as the upside. I think what a strong employer brand enables you to do is to hire above average talent for an average wage. Yeah. And you'll know in the compensation, you know, Total Ben's reward community, that essentially they're all aiming for median. They would probably like it to be lower than that, but generally speaking, they're aiming for median. But nobody aims for average when it comes to talent. So what you're trying to do is you're building equity in other areas in terms of the employment offer, and the benefit that you're deriving, ultimately, is your ability to bring those people in at a lower cost, because you have an attractive image. You're not spending as much time on getting people's attention and convincing them, you know, that's much easier. You're getting attention much more quickly because your brand's well known. You're convincing people because they're very positive towards you already. They're likely to join you at a lower premium. And the corporate executive board demonstrated that this is quite an important element as well. So the people are likely to expect less of a pay rise to come and join you than they would if your brand is poor. And so essentially, you know, you're converting all of that into a brand premium. And of course, then if you have a negative brand image, or not much of a brand image, but particularly if you have a bad brand image, then of course, if you've got all of the extras, so you really have to pay a great deal more to attract people's attention, because they don't really want to read about you. Or they have a negative view already, you've got to turn their view around. You've got to pay a lot more to executive search firms to go out and trawl, because they're not coming to you of their own accord. You know, all of those things then add up to actually a fairly major cost. So I think, you know, with a broad view in mind, for actually a relatively small, and because, I mean, the amount spent on employer brands in terms of the, you know, research and the brand development and so on is not a huge amount. I mean, if you compare it with the total cost of recruitment, and beyond that, if you compare it with the total amount of money spent on compensation within most businesses, which is huge, then the employer brand investment is relatively small. And what you're saying is, for, you know, very much from a point of view of strategic leverage, if you get your focus right and you get your employer branding right, then you are going to really help to reduce that recruitment marketing cost, and you'll be able to also get a much better cost, a return on investment in terms of performance, because you've got better talent from the amount you spent on compensation. So it's quite compelling, really. If you can get into the conversation around the business case using those kind of arguments, and you can get hold of the figures internally, then I think there are very few people who would argue that, you know, there isn't a pretty clear cost benefit from employer branding.
Great. Okay. Another question is, you mentioned about, it's easier for if you have a good brand already and a good employer brand. So companies like, I'm thinking consumer brands like Google, you mentioned Lego, Innocent, Virgin, Zappos.
Yes.
They seem to have great employer brands. Is it easier when you're in the B2C space?
Well, it depends how you look at it. I think if you're in a company in a consumer marketing company where you have fairly kind of youthful products, then you tend to have a fairly youthful culture, and therefore you tend to have a culture that attracts quite a lot of attention because you do colourful things and it's great and it's interesting and it's vibrant and so on. So I think when we're looking at companies like Google, Lego, and Innocent, Virgin, etc., that's what we're getting. We're getting that vibrant consumer-focused type of culture. However, I think if you take a step back from an employer brand point of view, actually, there are, in some respects, some downsides also to being a consumer brand, employer brand, and that's often that you're too popular. I mean, Google, I don't think particularly wants to have 3 million applications per year. You get the same with Unilever and L'Oreal, Procter and Gamble. They're getting at least now 1 million applications a year, and that's more than they want or need, because they were actually they want the right kind of people to be applying, and they want to be selecting from a more select group. And the fame of their consumer brands generally is generating much higher levels of application. So there's a funnily enough, there's a counter side to it. So in business to business, you tend to be much more of a niche player and known within your industry. There are some advantages to that because you're not typically going to be overwhelmed by applications. And I guess this is a rather odd way of looking at it, but you can build a much more specific and focused employer brand for your particular group and target and niche. So it doesn't all go one way, that's what I'm saying. I think naturally speaking, yes, it's easier if you've got that kind of young, kind of FMCG, vibrant type of culture or, high-tech kind of company culture. But B2B is not necessarily a bad place if you look at it on the upside.
Right, okay. And a recent example of, I guess, a consumer brand is Amazon.
Yeah.
How do the recent revelations impact their employer brand? And would it be lasting damage, or is it something that people will forget next month?
And I guess, even more recent example is Volkswagen, of course.
Of course.
Where there's been, much hand-wringing across the whole German nation, not alone just about the employment side of things. I don't know with Amazon. I mean, I think the thing is that there have been quite a few stories over the last 2 or 3 years about them not necessarily, should we say, being that caring about their employees because they're so customer focused, and they interestingly, in terms of their employment marketing, if you looked at it generally, it is pretty straight about the fact that they want to be the most customer-focused organization in the world, right? So that at least they're not starting from the point of view is that, we're lovely to employees and, come and join us. We're just a, happy place. We're very driven. They're very performance-oriented, etc. So I don't know. I think there's obviously going to be some damage to the Amazon reputation in terms of what's come out. However, I think those commentators who've looked at it closely would have read, let's say, Dave Lee. Dave Lee, who was the head of employer brand at Amazon until relatively recently and moved on. He wrote a very good post about, the truth of the matter and the fact that, like many organizations, often you'll get these outraged employees and outburst, and that will attract other people who've had bad experiences, but it doesn't necessarily reflect the whole story. And I think people are used in some respects for these to almost like reputation flash fires to come up, and I think Amazon has had one of those, and it probably will not affect them that strongly, because there are most people have a very good experience of them from a consumer point of view. They know they're a successful company, and at the end of the day, that counts for a lot. There have been a few, you know, disgruntled Amazon employees, fine, but there have also been some people who've leapt to their defense. You know, I think they're in a better position in some respects than a company like Volkswagen, where even though it's not been directly about employment, it really is saying a lot more about the values of the organization, where something has been really deeply institutionalized within the business that is completely counter to any claims that they've previously had about either looking about after the environment or corporate ethics, et cetera, et cetera. So I think in some respects that's much more damaging for a company when you get something much more deeply rooted than that. And I think Volkswagen, so to put the two in comparison, will suffer a lot more from an employment point of view than Amazon.
Okay. And you mentioned earlier about content marketing, the need to create content,
yes,
and to share content.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that sit together with social media and employee branding, all that, those three bits?
Well, yeah, I mean, as I was saying, I think there's been somewhat of a shift. I think employer branding really used to be thought of very much as campaign advertising, you know, and I've been on the agency side of it, where a great deal of effort has gone into creating the, you know, the campaign and the taglines, etc., with the aim of getting consistent messages out to the target audiences, and there's still a role for that to some degree. But I think because you know, paid media has become in some respects less influential, less engaging for people, and the social media has become more engaging and of more direct interest to people, particularly where it feels more personal, more authentic, and a little less manufactured. I mean, advertising by nature, you know, is pretty manufactured. I mean, people know that it's put together by marketing teams, whereas the kind of content that's generally classed as content in the content marketing space tends to be much more story-driven, personal, authentic. At least the good stuff is. So I think what's happened is the employer branding has really been pushed to the edges of the equation, and is the framing. You know, you want to make sure that the content that you get out to people or communication is well branded, so they recognize that it's about your company. And if they go from one site to another, you know, from your career site to your Facebook careers to LinkedIn to Instagram and other places, that it's recognizably the same company because you've got good branding, and you may have some anchor taglines and so on that, you know, okay, they're consistent overall. But I think it's the branding, as I say, has become the framing, and within the frame you have your content marketing, and your content marketing is where you have a much richer and continuous flow of personal, story-driven content. It's not always personal, because you know, you can have infographics about the company, and you can have all kinds of other, you know, games and quizzes and interactive things. But largely speaking, a lot of it at the moment is very much personal, story-driven, and that's going on across those various media. And we found from our own research, we've got a new service product called Iris, which is measuring people's response to social content. Fascinating. We've already got, I think, you know, close to about 1.5 million data points with people looking at content across most of the, you know, the major employers across the world, and saying, okay, what kind of content is this? You know, what are they trying to communicate, and how engaging is it? And we found that the content marketing that's really working at the moment is very much focused on people and culture. But interestingly, if you look at the full range of content, actually that doesn't necessarily account for the biggest chunk. There are lots of other things that people communicate about. But we found that the content that's really focused in, it's story-driven, it's personal, it's about the culture of the organization, and it really appears to be giving an authentic inside view, is the content marketing that's really winning. And the stuff that feels much more like branding, advertising, messaging, etc., it is actually not winning in terms of engagement or prompting people to apply. So it's really interesting. A big shift in some respect from the one to the other.
Okay. And you mentioned, well, you mentioned Instagram, LinkedIn, and there are lots of social channels.
Sure.
Which ones do you see working best for companies?
Well, I think, I think they're kind of emerging with slightly different roles, really. Yeah. I mean, I think LinkedIn is still somewhat of a more serious professional and a way of targeting individual people. It doesn't appear to be quite as effective engagement-wise in terms of, you know, telling the personal story or the inside story of the organization. For some reason, it doesn't seem to be playing quite that role in the same way that Facebook is. I think Facebook's really emerging now as that, you know, prime vehicle for getting across the personal side of your organization. It's still a bit experimental at the moment. I mean, people are posting all kinds of stuff, but I think the organizations have got a good content calendar on Facebook, and they're really thinking through the various themes that they're building up, what they're choosing to communicate about, not just how they're doing it, but what they're communicating about. Then Facebook seems to be doing really well. In some markets, Instagram is doing extremely well. I mean, I've been doing a fair bit of work in the Middle East, and their Instagram, you know, is really big, and in some respects it's bigger than Facebook. And I think that's because this card-based content, I mean, you get it in Facebook, but card and visually based content is very attractive to people when they're trying to work out the feel of a company. And of course, Twitter, it's not everybody's cup of tea, and a lot of companies, probably wrongly, are perhaps depending on it a little bit too much just to tweet out jobs. But I think Twitter increasingly is being used as that kind of connective device, you know, for the people who are on Twitter. It connects them to the right content, depending on where they're looking for content about different employers. But I think if you take a step back from it, while each of those social media seems to be emerging with a slightly different role, I think you've got to look at the full picture, because it's like a neural network. I mean, it's not like you can necessarily just manage the things individually and think that way or miss some of them out. Because I think, again, our research suggests that particularly students and, you know, Gen Y, they're looking at least 7 or 8 channels, different channels, when they're making a choice about an employer. Wow. So you've got to think about how they all work together, not just the individual elements. And, you know, you can't say, okay, we'll just use LinkedIn and let's not do Facebook. Because people are making judgments based on your presence in some of these media, as well as what you're saying and doing. So I think, they do have slightly different roles, but you've also got to take the big picture, and you've got to make sure that, I think, you've got a degree of presence in all of the main ones. And of course, YouTube goes without saying. Video is big now, but I think it's going to be even bigger, just because people, you know, intuitively, you know, and we've always known this, get more from moving images than they get from images, and they get more from images than they get from text, and it's the way things are going to go. So I think YouTube has to be an important part of the mix as well.
Yeah, and now Facebook are really promoting video content as well.
So. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think it's just inevitably, it's everything is being pulled in that direction, and it's putting a lot of pressure on companies. Because it can be, you know, it's obviously much more difficult to arrange videos than it is to arrange photography, and it's much more difficult to arrange photography than it is just to write stuff. So it is putting the pressure on when it comes to the, you know, content creation and creation and curation and so on within businesses. But I think inevitably it has to go in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, we did a tweet chat today about video marketing, actually, and
all right, okay.
One reflection on that was that people have been saying that, you know, next year is the year of video, and they've probably been saying that for the last 15 or 20 years.
Yeah.
But I think now technology is really catching up. Now you can watch live stream video on your on your phone or on the bus, and you can shoot a really high definition with your phone.
It's a scary business. This was my first experience of it at the Glassdoor Summit, because There may have been 200 people in the room, but they kept, you know, even before I made the presentation, saying, okay, we've now got 7,500 people online watching this live because they were streaming it. Yeah. So I was trying not to think about that when I was making my presentation because it's somewhat off-putting to think that you've got that many people watching your every move. But I think it's, you're right. I mean, these things are moving on very quickly. Obviously, video interviewing, there's a lot of discussion around that at the moment, and in terms of, I mean, it's the flip side really, but how you know, get a feel for people's character and personality and their culture fit, which is of course flip side of the employer brand really, how you get that via video, and how you can, in some respects, and I think this is perhaps pushing it a little bit, I think there are some companies who are claiming that, you know, they can have good predictive ability just based on the tone of your voice or your facial mannerisms or whatever. I think that's all a bit scary, to be honest, because it makes it sound like the robots are taking over. But, you know, it's just interesting. There's just a lot of experimentation at the moment, and I think that's healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you mentioned Glassdoor. So I've got two questions for you.
Okay.
So one, because there are a couple of ways of measuring your employer brand. So you've mentioned one way. LinkedIn have something called the Talent Brand Index.
Yes, yeah.
And then, of course, Glassdoor, they have their employee reviews and so on. What are your thoughts on those two metrics?
Well, I think you probably noted, I wrote about it in my book as well, on the Talent Brand Index. And I think it's a useful measure of volume of engagement with your brand. And to some degree, you know, the level of engagement, because you've got the kind of conversion rate, I guess, between how many, you know, contacts you've got and how, you know, are they actively engaged with you or not. So I think, you know, it's quite useful, but it's a fairly broad measure, I have to say, because it's not telling you what you're associated with. It's not really giving you the diagnostics. And I would say, what's missing from it a little bit, and I think you almost have to work it out for yourself, is, are you, you know, for the size of your business, are you punching above your weight or below your weight? Because a lot of it, of course, in overall, in terms of the size of your spread, is depending on how many employees you've got. Because, you know, a lot of the very strong brands from a talent brand index point of view, they just happen to be large companies. And we're looking at this at Universum as well, because, of course, a lot of the, apart from, well, no, I say not apart from Google, because they've got 50,000 employees now. But most of the, of course, the world's most attractive employers just happen to be quite large employers, and particularly employers of students. So you have to, with these things, I think, now also work out from an employer brand point of view, are you behind where you should be in terms of the number of contacts you have, the influence you have, the level of engagement you have, or are you ahead of the game? Are you, you know, for your size, actually, you're punching above your weight? But overall, no, I think it's useful. It's just, you know, you do. I would not be using it as a standalone metric for the strength of my employer brand. I'd really want to be looking at some other things as well. And in terms of Glassdoor, I have to say I was a bit unsure to begin with, because I think when Glassdoor started up, like many of these sites, you get somewhat of a polarized view. So you think, well, why have people chosen to write something on these sites? And it suggests to me that you're likely to get, you know, the people who are very, very positive about a company and will go out of their way to be advocates, or you'll get the people who are, you know, by the nature of their individual experiences, have had a bad experience, and therefore they're going to be particularly negative. So that, coming from an employee research background, is not particularly useful overall, because what you want is a broad representation. You know, you want to hear from the silent majority. But I think things have moved on, and I think actually the critical mass with Glassdoor now is getting pretty good, and I have to say that of the companies I know, when I look now at their Glassdoor ratings and I look at also at the stories that come through, They're getting more accurate and more representative, I would say. And of course, you know, what you want ideally to get from Glassdoor is for the particular types of story that really gives you an insight, that give you an insight into the culture, to come through. And that's the important thing. I don't think it's necessarily, it's not, because, you know, I think some people maybe see it as a bit of a whistleblowing tool. And of course, you will get negatives in some of these places. But I think actually now on the upside, you're also getting a quite distinctive flavor in many organizations of the plus side, of the things that are particularly good about companies. I started out being a bit of a cynic, but I have to say I've become a bit of a believer. And that's not just because I've been to the summit. In some respects, that's why I agreed to speak at the summit, because I had become a believer. I think there's great things ahead for them. I think it's now, you know, spreading out of the US, where it's pretty strong, into other markets, and I think it'll do well.
Yeah, I think was it this year or last year, they've got a UK version now.
Yeah.
And they're probably going further afield as well.
Yeah, no, they're expanding. I think, you know, so it's like LinkedIn, you know, to begin with, you think, well, you know, is it really worth it? You know, you're making a few contacts with people. But but then, you know, when you get critical mass, it turns into an altogether different organism. And I think having seen Vault, which was a previous kind of version of it, kind of rise and fall, I thought maybe Glassdoor would go the same way. But I think they're here to stay. I think they're a pretty canny bunch, and they seem to have their heart in the right place, actually, as well, which is important.
Good. And can you give us any examples, maybe a few examples of companies who are leading the way in employer brand management? And they don't have to be your clients, Richard.
They can be. Well, they can. I think there are quite a few good examples now. The companies, and I guess I have to almost choose the companies that I've worked for, because they're the companies that I know reasonably well.
Fair enough.
But I think, you know, companies like BP, and I choose them because, you know, I'm often tempted to go with the likes of L'Oreal and Unilever and P&G. I think all of whom are very good actually on the employer brand management side, and have been for quite a few years, in terms of the way they've, you know, built the brand platforms, just like the consumer brands, and they've managed them pretty consistently and professionally. I think all of those are very good examples. In fact, you know, generally, first place to look for good practice tends to be in the FMCG sector, because they really know their branding, and they've mostly done it very well for their employer brands. But as I say, coming back to BP, a less obvious candidate, I think they've done a pretty good job of building a consistent employer brand platform, put a lot of effort into the research to choose the right themes to focus on, create the right kind of employment deal that was reflective of their culture. But I think the important thing that they've done is also get a good balance between, you know, a nice kind of standout campaign. They've got this campaign called Perspectives, which is very much about the perspective of different employees from around the business, to give you a feel for the overall culture. So it's not, you know, it's not banging home a tagline. It's very much about different points of view, which kind of add up to a consistent feel for what the culture is like. And they've been very inventive in terms of using lots of different types of content and channels. So I think they're a very good example. If you look at their content on Facebook, through social media, how they use LinkedIn, how they use their career site, they've got a great variety of different forms of content. They've done reports, they've done infographics, they've done stories, they've got profiles, but the themes, the underlying brand themes, and I think this is important, they come through pretty strongly. You know that it's not just engagement for the point of view engagement. It's not just aiming to give you a warm feel in the tummy for BP. It's about saying, look, these are the things that we stand for, and you see those themes coming through. You also find that content is very well branded. So if you laid it all out on the page or on the table, which of course in an agency you're able to do, but if you get what I mean, you can see that it all comes across as very evidently and consistently BP. You're not going to confuse it with any other company. So I think from that point of view, I think they've been a very good example. And actually, credit to them actually that even during quite a difficult time, even though for the industry, they've maintained again a degree of focus and consistency around the employer brand where others have perhaps slackened off a bit. So I think for a number of good reasons, I'd suggest take a look at BP. I think they've done a great job.
Great, and I remember hearing a talk by I think it's John Tate from BP.
He's now at Apple.
Oh, is he? Oh, he's done well then. I remember him telling the audience that so in his tenure they had a deep water spill.
Yes.
Deep something, and then they actually got lot more applications than normal because people applied to BP because they wanted to help.
With
clean up work and so on. I don't know if they were the right type of people applying, but that was an interesting development. It's funny you mentioned BP because at our conference in November, SM London Live, on the 11th of November, don't miss it, Richard, we have the head of social media, Mark Salt, keynoting from BP. So that's
great. Well, there we are. You've chosen well.
Great. Finally, my final business question here is, what do you see happening in the space over the next 3 to 5 years?
There have been lots of predictions about this, that, and the other, and we've already talked about some of them. I think things are, from an employer brand communication point of view, are likely to become richer in terms of the format. So, but by which I mean, I think if you were to say compared how much text was written in terms of getting a message across to how many images were used to how much video was used, I think you'd be going from left to right towards the video. And I think we'll see a lot more of that. I found it quite interesting actually looking at the new Microsoft career site, where I think, I'm not sure if I've seen it anywhere else, but actually rather than the static images you tend to get on the first page, they've actually got video. And I think the new Apple, I think what they call them, live photographs, where you get 2 seconds and you get, rather than a still image, I think everything is going to go towards moving images. And I think that in itself is going to create, as I say, quite a lot of resource issues, but I think ultimately it will help bring a great deal more life to the whole area, particularly career sites and everything else, where it's a less static content, much more moving content, and I think that's definitely one big trend. I think ultimately we'll see a lot more. I think it's still going to take a little bit longer, but more use of animation and gamification. And I don't mean gamification as in the kind of matching games and just gaming. I mean using a lot of the technology that's been used for many of the 3D and now completely immersive environments that are used for gaming. And I think obviously if you want people to get a feel for what the organization is like, then one way of doing that is to try and immerse them in those worlds, immerse them in your world. Reveal did it. I think they were, years ahead of their time. Oh, sorry, L'Oreal did it with their business game called Reveal, which was a kind of an immersive environment, but now looks a bit clunky because things have moved on so quickly. But I'm pretty sure things will start heading in that direction and we'll see a lot more of that. I think, and I would like to say that I think there will be a degree of maturity reached in terms of the management of the employer brand, so that this focus still within many organizations of just focusing on the presentation side of things, the recruitment marketing, the identity externally, without really linking it up properly and integrating it with people management internally. I think there will be growing maturity in that area. We've seen, you know, over the last 10 years, it's moved on leaps and bounds. I think over the next, you know, 5 years, we'll see a lot more employer brand managers having a role which is sitting between recruitment marketing and people management rather than solidly in recruitment marketing. Because in many cases, I think, you know, people are calling themselves or being called employer brand marketing people or employer branding people, and really they're still playing the same role as a recruitment role rather than a coordination role across communication experience. So I think those are three of the big ones for me. I guess, you know, like anything, there's probably a degree of wishful thinking in all three of those. And it may take longer than one would expect, but I think certainly I definitely see a lot of movement in all of those directions.
Great. And finally, one of my favorite parts of the book, your book, yes, which I just finished, was the intros to chapters. So oftentimes,
all right, okay,
sometimes, yeah, involving your family.
Yes.
And so we discussed this before we started recording it. Can you please share the story of your granny and Field Marshal Montgomery?
Right. Okay. Well, actually, it was my, I have to say it just for accuracy's sake, it was my great aunt. Great aunt deed. And she was, my family come from Cumberland, so she was a strong northern lass with a strong Cumbrian accent. And so she left home and rather than joining up with the English nurses, she joined the Free French. And the Free French were the bunch of French who, rather than, you know, giving into Hitler and becoming part of Vichy France, actually left their shores and came over to London. And they had a field hospital unit that travelled around with them. And my great aunt Deed was the head of that nursing unit. So she was basically the head nurse. So they were in North Africa, and the Free French were fighting alongside the Eighth Army. And alongside the nurses, they actually had a number of Debs, and really they were Debs, you know, very much aristocratic, coming from aristocratic families, who used to drive the cars and drive the ambulances, which was quite interesting. And these people, of course, when the top brass came out, were always invited to go to the dinners, because, you know, the generals came out, it's still military, etc., but, you know, being the generals, they like to, you know, have their smart dinner parties wherever they go, and they would invite, you know, these Debs to come along. And quite often the nurses, or at least Aunt Deed, would be invited along as well. So it was a period during the North African campaign where we were not having a particularly good time. We were being knocked back, you know, left, right, and centre. Tobruk had fallen, and there was a dinner with, you know, Churchill had come out to, you know, really find out what was going wrong, what needed to be done, etc. And my aunt was invited along, and the conversation turned to what she thought was going wrong, and my aunt, being quite outspoken, was basically blurted out. She said, "Well, you know, the trouble is that all of the soldiers in the hospitals, all they ever talk about is Rommel. You know, he's a character. He's a real leader." And she said something along the lines of, "You know, we need somebody like Rommel. You know, they need to have somebody who can, you know, take the lead. They want somebody who, you know, they would fight for, you know, rather than the faceless idiots who are currently running the army." So, and I think this was kind of stunned silence, and was not taken too well. I don't think my aunt ever got invited to another one of these dinner parties. But the funny thing was that within a pretty short space of time, I think within a few weeks, two of the old generals were pretty much, you know, packed off, and a new general turned up who had, you know, had a lot more charisma and was able to make a big difference. And of course, that was General Montgomery. So my aunt, she didn't necessarily directly claim that she'd won the Second World War, but she had a reasonable claim, I guess, through a moment of either kind of madness or just sheer bravery of speaking her mind, that may have been a moment that turned things around. So there we are. So that's my great aunt Dee. Actually, of course, the story ends with of course, you know, Montgomery helping the Eighth Army turn around, win the Battle of Alamein, and after Alamein, it really turned the tide of the war for the Brits. So it's a pretty good story, I say, and hopefully soon to be made into a motion picture, which which would be very nice. I think I think I'd probably say yes. It'd be nice to get Kate Blanchett to play my aunt, somebody like that. It'd be nice.
Yeah, I was picturing some of the settings of the English Patient. So
yes,
there's definitely a gap in the market because that's another film.
Yes, yes, it is, and that did well. So I'm sure we could probably sell it. It's like the English Patient meets, I don't know,
Great Aunt Deed.
The Great Aunt Deed. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So which intro? Which chapter did this intro?
I think this one was the one around internal engagement, actually, because, of course, you know, what Montgomery was had been very good at, and why he managed to turn things around is that he was great at communicating. I mean, he went out, you know, like modern leaders do, which generals then tended not to do, and spent a lot of time just briefing units of soldiers face to face and telling them what was going to happen and why they were important and the role they had in it and all of that kind of stuff. So it was really, you know, good modern management thinking, really. It was management by walking around, but he led the troops in a very personal way. They all met him at some point. They all knew him, you know, whether they liked him or not. They thought that at least he spent the time to come and see us. You know, he cares, and we'll fight for him. And they did. And of course, it paid huge dividends.
Absolutely. Great. Thanks for that. So where can we learn more about employer branding, about Universum, and how can our millions of listeners connect with yourself, Richard?
Well, of course, you can buy the book.
I'll put a link in.
The book's really designed to be somewhat of a handbook. I mean, it does have a number of these stories in. It doesn't pay to be too technical in terms of describing employer brand management when so much of employer branding these days is about storytelling. So there are a fair number of stories in there to bring it to life. But also you'll find lots of information on the Universum website that has a lot of data actually around rankings of different companies in different places. If you're a part of a big company, you may well find yourself listed. And also lots of white papers. We're doing a lot of research at the moment in all kinds of areas. There's some very interesting recent research on millennials, on the future of employer branding. We're just about to release a new report on Generation Z, which is based on talking to, or at least having surveyed 50,000 16 to 19-year-olds around the world, which is going to be very interesting. And if you want to push it further, I also suggest you look at the Employer Branding Academy, because that's an e-learning platform, as I mentioned, and actually, you know, you can read the book, and of course you can read the papers, but if you're really serious about studying this area and maybe a new role, or you want to get better at the role you're in, I would suggest it's a very good course to take. You know, it's something you can do mainly online in your own time, but it does have a workshop at the front end. It has a workshop with kind of examinations and case studies at the back end, and some, you know, professional certification and so on. But I think I'd recommend that if you're really serious about this kind of area, then definitely take a look. And again, you can find that online. I think it's if you just type in Employer Branding Academy, you'll get there pretty quick.
Yeah, I think it's universumglobal.com and employerbrandingacademy.com.
Right.
And we can also find you on Twitter and LinkedIn, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm at Ree Mosley. I won't read out the LinkedIn thing, but
put a link in.
I think if you put a link in, and you'll find me pretty quick. But I've also been having been prompted by Universum. I've also started writing fairly regular posts on various aspects of employer brand management, starting with an 8-part series on EVP development and how to develop an effective EVP. But you'll find those are kind of bite-sized chunks of guidance on getting that part of the employer brand equation right, and I'll be following those on with a series of other posts on other aspects like content marketing and metrics and other things we've discussed today.
Great. Well, thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure.
So if you liked what you heard from Richard, why don't you buy his book? Or even better, why not check it out from your local library? Any questions or feedback for us, please ping us at LinkHumans on Twitter or email us at info@linkhumans.com. Finally, SM London Live is fast approaching. It's happening on the 11th of November. Tickets are flying off the shelf. And if you want to avoid disappointment, you want to head over to socialmedialondon.co.uk to grab yours now. That's it, folks. Thank you very much for listening, and I will catch you next time.